When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Chris Evans here. Welcome to the latest instalment of the Best of the Breakfast Show with Sky from Virgin Radio. This is our podcast. The Foo Fighters are on the way with their exceedingly friendly frontman, the nicest man in rock and roll, Dave Grohl, gets us rocking with the story behind the band's 10th studio album, Medicine at Midnight, out now. The fantastically funny Alan Carr gets us all aboard with his terrific new podcast, his travel podcast, Life's a Beach. The always brilliant Ramesh Ranganathan tells tales from the third series of the hilarious Sky One show, Robin Ramesh Versus, and his BAFTA-nominated topical comedy show, The Ranganation. And former Navy SEAL Rich Devinny shares tips and tricks from his incredible new book, The Attributes. All this week. Can't believe all this was this week. Can't believe it. All of that and plenty more still to come. Now, Dapper Dave, who's first, please?
Our next guest is the audio equivalent of sand in between your toes and sunshine beating down on your face. Episode one of his new Travel Tales podcast, Life's a Beach, is out now. And here to tell us more is a man that will have absolutely no problem being compared to Judith Chalmers. It's the spectacular Alan Carr.
All right, Alan. Oh. We've been playing clips from your new podcast all morning. It's absolutely brilliant, Al.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. I've been bored like everyone else, and I just thought let's have a bit of escapism.
Yeah. It's a very good idea. And, you know, when I saw the title Life's a Beach, I thought, is that a play on Life's a Beach? Is it about life, what it's about? But it's actually about travel, isn't it? You've come up with a travel podcast. Congratulations.
Thank you, my love. Listen, it's like, I just think, you know, when Chatty Man ended, I love to talk and I love to chat. And like everyone, I've been bored out the head with all this pandemic. So I rang up some of my friends and said, would you mind talking about the times when we could go away? And I don't want people to think it's like a full of like rich, posh rah-rahs talking about, oh, don't you hate it when your mega yacht breaks down on the beach, you know, in Saint-Tropez. It's about your earliest holiday memories. I mean, the great, I interview Robbie Williams, it was come up in a few weeks, and his story's about, you know, his dad being one of those holiday entertainers, you know, on campsites up and down Britain. It's so interesting, him, you know, his stories about that. So it's really accessible and inclusive.
It's a great podcast, and it kicks off. I mean, you have Ramesh, who's, you know, he is guest gold on the first show, and also he's won a BAFTA for his travel shows. He's really funny, he's really interesting. You get on, you've been away together, you talk about cliff diving or cliff bombing in Ibiza, you've got all that going on, throwing tomatoes at each other at La Tomartino, Tomartina.
Can I tell you about that? Tomartina, people go, oh, amazing. You know, it's the most disgusting thing ever. They throw moldy tomatoes on you. I'm just show. But they, you know, when you watch it on the telly, they're throwing it, but they're picking tomato out the gutter and throwing it in your face. It's disgusting, Chris.
I know, because I've heard the podcast. What I love about it, Al, is your... I know on Chatty Man, you did chat a lot, but you asked some fantastic questions here of Ramesh. And also, your podcast, it's got real production values to it, because there's I don't want to give it away for people who haven't heard it, but it's got some lovely twists on it, because you are the captain of a plane at one point, then you're the chief steward. That's all good news. But of course, the podcast opens up before you even talk to Ramesh, and Ramesh is there. Joyce gets a mention, your dog. Paul gets a mention. You got it all going on. Keep it in the family.
Do you know what we've got in the family now, Chris?
Tell me.
My next door neighbour had all her chickens killed by a fox, apart from one, and the chickens traumatised. So we've actually got the chicken in our house as well.
Wow. You got it. You have got it all going on, haven't you?
I have. But we can't put it back in the hutch because it's traumatised. It's got a dazed look on its face,
And it's not a hutch, it's a coop.
Well, it's that front room, if I'm honest.
All right, so Ramesh used to work in the, was it the Ray-Ban shop or the sunglasses hut at Heathrow Airport?
Sunglasses hut.
Yeah, you talk about that, don't you?
Yeah, do that. And then because he's gone everywhere, you know, Mongolia, and obviously his, you know, Sri Lanka is where his heritage from and all his family is. So it's really interesting. But I would say, you mentioned Japan. Did you hear the Japan thing? It's so funny. Because you must have been to Japan, Chris.
I went once and I had a similar experience to you and Paul.
It is absolutely bonkers. Nothing makes sense, which I absolutely love. And we're going, we wanted to go out and have a drink. And then we see this club and there's this shop and there's music like, and there's a woman dancing in the window and let's go to that club and get a margarita. It was a towel shop. Nothing makes sense over there.
I know. And you ended up buying two towels, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, I bought a couple of towels and a flannel.
And now you and Ramesh also share a conversation about body, you know, mutual body dysmorphia.
Yes. Yes, yeah. The thing is, before all this madness, I would often go away on holiday, you know, in January before it all starts. So I haven't had that. But with me, I always go up a cup size over Christmas. And then, you know, with all the roses and the chocolates. So I'm never fit. You know what I mean? When on the holiday.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but it's, for me, it's my breasts at the top. So I will have to have the towel as a horseshoe round me to cover them as I get in and out the pool, you know.
The conversation between the pair of you, it's so warm. It's so funny. You know, you obviously completely trust each other. It's about an hour long, your podcast. How long do you record for?
About an hour. And the thing is with Rom, you know, he's just great company and it was so nice. And I mean, do an hour. It is what it is. And I just feel like, you know, with Chatty Man finishing, I realised, especially in the pandemic, we've all sat down and had a good old think. And I said, I realise how much I just like chatting to people. I mean, I've known Michael Parkinson, but I just love chatting and finding out about people. So this podcast really sort of helped me through the whole pandemic. And actually, I thought, I actually enjoy this. So, and I'm my own boss, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes with chat shows, there's an agenda here. You've got to try and get some, you know, salacious gossip out. But this is just me with a cup of tea chatting to some really funny friends. And I think it shows.
But Alan Carr, thank you very much indeed. Big Al on the show there. His amazing new podcast, Life's a Beach, is available now.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
He's getting into more scrapes with his mate Rob Beckett for Series 3 of Rob and Ramesh Versus, which continues next Thursday on Sky One. And he's once again heading up the Ranga Nation on BBC Two. So, ladies and gents, please welcome the rib-tickling rascal that is Ramesh Ranganathan.
Hi, Rom.
Hello, Chris. You're right. I like rib-tickling rascal.
Do you?
I'm a fan of that. I'm a big fan of that.
Rom, you're so famous now.
Do you think so? Yes. I don't think so.
Well,
I'm appreciating you saying that.
It's good that you don't think you are, which is part of your charm, but you are, because obviously you're on this show to talk about Rob and Ramesh Versus, but the scallywags here have put this at the top of my cheat sheet. Rob and Ramesh Versus the Ranga Nation, because you're up against, you're not really up against yourself, but you've got it all going on, haven't you?
Yeah, that's sort of an unfortunate coincidence, really. We did Rob and Rom a while ago, and then the Ranga Nation just come up. So I've got this thing where, I'm on twice a week. So apologies to people.
But also, not only are you on twice a week on competing channels. This is what I mean. You got it all going on. They normally they demand an exclusive. They demand like golden handcuffs. He can only work for us. He's a channel star, but they just want any piece of you they can get. As do I, to be honest.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I tell you what, mate, I'm absolutely buzzing off this interview so far. This is unbelievable.
Well, it's only going to get better. Yeah. So we had Dave Grohl in my bedroom last night on my laptop on Zoom live from his house. So I was in his house and he was in my house. It's very exciting. Yeah. Very exciting, Rom.
How were you? Because I had a thing on my podcast. I do this hip-hop podcast and we have, obviously Dave Grohl's a legend. We had DJ Premier, who's a hip-hop legend.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I just fell to pieces. Yeah. I couldn't listen to it back because I found myself so embarrassing. But did you manage to keep it together?
I kept it together, I think. People are saying that I did, but only till the absolute, or for the absolute sort of minimum, because the second he sort of got up from his chair in his, wherever he was doing it, in his house, I fell apart and I couldn't sleep. I haven't slept.
I bet. Yeah. Yeah. Just going over the conversation in your head, right?
Yeah. And also, to be honest, what I did was I watched you and Rob in your show afterwards. And it was exactly what I needed, because you've got to turn left. You know what I mean?
Sure. It is a left. I would describe that show as a left turn. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Rob and Ramesh Versus. Season 3 continues next Thursday. It kicked off last night. I had this little sort of sneaky. I could have watched it live, because normally I'm asleep by 10 o'clock. But last night, I've not been asleep at all. So you take on the art world. Now, when people come on the show, I often say, I may have asked you this, Ron, before. You know, do you know who Banksy is? Because I'm obsessed with Banksy. But I'm going to ask you now, do you know who Bexy is?
Yeah, that was that was Beckett's interpretation. There's actually a rumour that Banksy's operating in Crawley. I don't know if you've heard this rumour, but there's been some artwork appearing up around Crawley. So people are getting very excited where I live.
Is that true?
Yeah, genuinely. Yeah, there's been bits and pieces appearing around Crawley.
And on the
Facebook forums, everybody's been going wild about it. So yeah, it's very exciting times in Crawley, which is unusual.
Well, I don't know. I think you pretty much put Crawley on the map. Who might have put Crawley on the map before you? Other sons and daughters of Crawley that we may have heard of?
Chico.
Yeah, Chico Time.
Dan Walker.
Yeah.
Gareth Southgate.
Oh, it's good. It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, and The Cure from Crawley. Although,
just got very cool.
Yeah.
Just got very So for people who don't know what Rob and Ramesh is, if you've got Sky, then you might as well sell it, because if you're not watching the show and you have Sky, you're mad. So there's that. But you take on different worlds. So you've had NFL previous. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, because the Philadelphia Eagles had won the Super Bowl, and we were lucky enough to go and spend some time training with them, and we kind of immersed ourselves in the world of NFL. So we went to watch an Eagles game, and we did all of the tailgating, you know, in the car park beforehand, where all the fans are out there like making a massive thing of it. So yeah, we did go and do a bit of NFL, and then at Wembley, Rob and I did a challenge where we had to receive the longest pass. Which the whole thing is, I mean, the thing I found about it is, I just thought it was impenetrable when I first, you know, first looking at the sport, but actually, once you get into it, it is great. Do you know what I mean? It's just that thing of going, getting your head around how it works. But once you do, it is a great sport.
Right. So many follow-up questions like that. But first of all, not a problem for the viewer, right? Not a problem for Sky, I wouldn't imagine, because I think the viewing figures may be definitely will be as good as seasons 1 and 2. But, you know, what if they're better and the program's cheaper to make? You're never going to play with the NFL again. You're never going baseballing. You're never even going to the Heathrow Airport anymore, Ramesh.
Mate, do you know what? You have identified a problem that we have discussed, because whenever you're talking to the Sky or the production team about, you know, we've got to go big, this has got to be adventurous, and then if you manage to pull that off without leaving the UK, then it becomes a huge problem. So I don't know what we're going to do. It's sort of this weird thing where I do want the series to be successful, but not too successful. Do you know what I mean? I still want to go away. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
Well, so is it all domestic this season because of COVID?
Pretty much, yeah, yeah. It was a difficult one, because we wanted to do the series, obviously, and obviously you've got to do it safely. But it's that thing of, like, genuinely, we sat down and said, can we make this show good under, you know, with the restriction we're facing? Because what we didn't want to do is, because we'd had so much fun with the first two series, you don't want to undermine that by doing a version where, because people will forgive so much, won't they? But at the end of the day, you want the show to be good. So we managed to figure out a way that we felt we were able to sort of deliver a show to the same standard. And the production team have been amazing. So Rob and I are really buzzing about it. It's great.
Yeah, but, you know, Ranganation from your garage as well. The walls are closing in, Rom.
Well, you know, the thing is that it's so weird, because basically when Series 2 we did in the garage.
Yeah.
And then Series 3, we're back in a studio, but only me.
Yeah.
So the Ranganation and the guests are still at home. So it's basically a studio that's attempting to simulate my garage. That's kind of where we're at now. But It is weird going into the studio. I got so excited. My mum got so excited. She said, "Oh, back in the studio." And I was like, "No, you're not actually, mum. You're still at home." So it was a bit of a downer for her.
Ramesh, thank you for being on the show. Please come and talk to us again.
I will do. Thank you so much for having me, guys. I appreciate
you're
it.
You're amazing, as always. That is the brilliant Ramesh Ranganathan. Rob and Ramesh versus Season 3 continues next Thursday on Sky One, but you can catch up on Seasons 1, 2 and Episode 1 from Season 3 right now, as and when you like.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Put simply, rock music at the hands of our next guest doesn't get any better. The Foo Fighters' 10th studio album, Medicine at Midnight, is unleashed today. So listen up as we take a growl down memory lane with the godfather of grunge himself. It's the one and only Dave Grohl!
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So here we go. World album release day. Does it always feel the same?
Well, this time's a little different, I have to be honest. I mean, it's always a relief, but this time maybe more so since we finished this album a year ago. So we've kind of been waiting for this day for a long, long, long time. So it feels maybe a little bit even sweeter than it normally would because of what we've been doing the last year, you know.
And it was touch and go last year because it was due for February. So it could have happened, couldn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean, we were really close. I think the idea was, originally, the album's going to come out on July 4th, right, 2020, because that was the 25th anniversary to the day of the very first album. So we had this big plan, 25th anniversary, 25th anniversary tour and stuff like that. But then obviously we decided to kind of wait.
So if the Foo Fighters, 1995, could have emailed some advice to Medicine at Midnight, what might it have emailed?
It would probably be relax a little. Take a deep breath. Stop running. Just walk from point A to point B. That's the past 25 years for me has been a steady jog, you know, just nonstop. And, but that's the way I've always been. It's the way I always do it. So, yeah, I mean, I think like just take a little time to like sit down, take a deep breath and appreciate what's going on.
Isn't it funny that the younger Foo Fighters would be giving the older Foo Fighters more sage advice than the other way around?
I mean, you know, I wish I knew what I know now when I was younger. You know what I mean? Like, everybody feels that way somehow, for sure.
And of course, Foo Fighters, when you were just the Foo Fighter, of course, singularly, famously 17 songs, 5 days. Compare that with the gestation and incubation period of Medicine at Midnight.
Well, you know, when I went in to record what became the first Foo Fighters record, I really didn't imagine that it was going to be a band, that it was going to be an album, that it was going to be a quarter of a century. Like, I didn't, none of that stuff. I basically just went to a studio down the street from my house, which I could drive a go-kart to. I had go-karts. I didn't even need to use a car. And so I would like drive down on this little lawnmower engine go-kart and make a pot of coffee and just start recording these things. But I'd always recorded things by myself. I just never really let anyone hear it. So now, you know, I enjoy the process a little more now because I get to share it with the people in my band. I see it. Sometimes it's a bit more adventurous or a bit more of a, like an exploration. Why don't I try this? I've given myself more time in the studio to actually experiment and discover things that I never would have in the 6 days I made that first record. I mean, that first record was like 3 or 4 songs a day and just moving as fast as we could. So it's different now, but it's still as rewarding. It really is.
And you seem to have shaken off the LA heebie-jeebies because they were there for a while. Every time you tried to do something in Los Angeles, you had to run back home to Ohio in the basement, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've always been the type of person that in making records, the most important, and being in a band, the most important thing to me is the experience. And so you just kind of have to like search for, you have to find these environments, right? Because ultimately, like the atmosphere of where you are, where you're recording, what you're doing, it influences the outcome. And so that's something I've always been into. Like, let's make a record in a garage. Let's make a record in a haunted house. Let's make a record in 8 studios around the country. Like, and I think that it really does influence what people finally here.
And so this record was made in a haunted house. You did have to sign an NDA. This is all true. And the guy was trying to sell it. Did he sell it? Did you buy it?
No clue. I'm never going back. I don't care. It's out of my life. I don't want to really relive that. I'm better now.
Okay. Well, you seem well. You seem fine. Have we got time for some questions from the listeners? Are you okay for this?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, here we go. It's my 14th birthday on Friday. My name's Rory. 7 years ago, I asked Dave what his favorite Dr. Seuss book was. He recommended to me If I Ran the Rainforest. Does he have a book recommendation for me now, 7 years later?
Oh, geez. there's a good one. How old is this person now?
He's now 14. He was 7, and you did talk to him very nicely 7 years ago.
Right. Let's see. If he's 14 now, I would have to go with Hammer of the Gods.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yes.
Fishing for sharks in the zoo next door from the third floor hotel room.
Edgewater Inn. I've been there.
We'll leave it at that. Right, couple more. What was the first song you wrote on the first Foo Fighters album, and what drove you to write a whole album's worth of music, you nut job, Tom and Marlowe?
The first song I wrote on the first Foo Fighters record was probably the song Exhausted.
All right, three more. You're easily one of the most charismatic and natural frontmen of the last 25 years, Dave Grohl. Did you know you had it in you when you were drumming on Nevermind, says Jim, in Nottinghamshire?
No. I just did it. I really did it.
I know you did.
It took me a long time to become such an enchanting frontman. Yeah, it took a while.
Okay. Well done. Congratulations, you've arrived. My son, Harry, who's 9, he's the biggest Foo Fighters fan ever. Would like to ask Dave, hey Dave, what is the one best piece of advice you would give to a 9-year-old guitar player? Also, what do those kids write on their signs that make you pull them out of the crowd at your concert? I want to know because I want to write that on the sign and be pulled out of one of your concerts.
Okay. Harry, whenever we pulled anyone out of the concert, like out of the audience to the stage, first of all, it's never pre-planned, never has been. When I look down and I see someone begging to come up on stage and play, I look at them and I decide, like, okay, this could go one of two ways. This can either be the most incredible experience of all of our lives, or a total train wreck. And I'm okay with either. If they come up and they blow everyone's mind and they're the next Jimi Hendrix, yes, we did it. If they come up and it's such a train wreck that everyone wants their money back, yes, we did it. So we'll see. Yeah.
Andrew Sharp in Bolton says, have you made it? Do you feel like you've made it?
Well, I made it to the end of yesterday. Let's see if I can make it to the end of today.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So we've heard from 3 mind-blowingly good guests already, but there's still so much more to come. TV presenter Angela Scanlon harnesses virtual reality and gets green-fingered in her new BBC Two series, Your Garden Made Perfect. The cinematic firecracker Juno Temple takes us to the deep south of the US of A, with stories from her new movie Palmer, in which she co-stars alongside Justin Timberlake. Secretary of Health and Social Care Matt Hancock updates on the latest COVID vaccine situation. And swimmer, journalist and author Bonnie Suey takes us on a deep dive into her brilliant new book, Why We Swim. All of that and more still to come. So much to get through. So, Dave, who's next?
Whether you're a leader or a follower, our next guest, a retired Navy SEAL officer, is going to get the best out of you. So strap in. His new book, The Attributes, 25 Hidden Drivers to Optimal Performance, is out now. So here to up our game and Navy SEAL the deal is the heart of the nails, Rich Devinny.
Good morning, Rich.
Hey, good morning, Chris. Nice to be here. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness me. Thanks so much for being on the show. So excited to talk to you. I love your book. I listened to Rich's podcast, episode 571 of the Rich World podcast with Rich. 2.5 hours of absolute gold. And I understand you're talking to us from Virginia Beach. I've just Googled it. My goodness me, you lucky ducky. It's not the worst place to live in the world, is it?
No, it's nice. I like being on the beach, at least somewhere. So it's a nice place on the beach, which is good.
It's got a look of Miami about it, hasn't it, Virginia Beach?
It does, yeah. It's mid Atlantic. You know, when you look at the states, so it's a little bit of A little bit of Florida, a little bit of New England, kind of mixed, which is nice.
So, Rich, well done for living there. Can you actually see the sea from where you're from? Not this time of night, obviously, but usually.
No, I'd say about 5 minutes from the beach. I'm not high enough. If I were high enough, I could see it, but not from my house.
So, first of all, give us a bluffer's guide to your career. Give us what you've done in like 30 seconds tops, please.
With a book or overall?
Overall.
Oh, overall. Well, so I joined the Navy back in mid-90s. Well, I grew up in New England, joined the Navy in mid-90s, went to the SEAL teams, and spent a career with the Navy SEALs. Obviously, that was throughout the entire war, so there was a lot of deployments involved to Iraq, Afghanistan, and other places. But one of the most interesting things I did while I was a SEAL was I ran training for one of our specialized commands. And in doing so, was able to kind of get very interested in human performance and why and how people do what they do, especially during times of challenge, stress, and uncertainty. So that kind of kept in the back of my mind until I retired in January 2017, and I began speaking and teaching around leadership and high-performing teams. And then really, that was when I kind of began to marinate on this idea again and decided to write a book about these attributes, these innate qualities that allow us to drive forward, push forward, and do what we do. And so I'm just really fascinated with the human engine and, you know, those things that allow people, some people to really succeed and other people to not succeed, and how best to break it down and articulate it based on my experience.
And the interesting thing about attributes is that they first came onto your radar because, you know, when you're in charge of this training, you began to analyze the training, and there was a particular bump in the road, wasn't there? Because you were seeing people, you were seeing Navy SEALs already qualified as SEALs. You were seeing mm-hmm. them hit a wall that their skill set couldn't overcome. And you thought, hang on a minute, what is going here? This is a lose-lose situation. We need to change this.
That's correct. Yeah, it was a couple things. So first of all, these guys that were coming through were obviously highly skilled. They were experienced SEALs, and by all accounts should have been making it through our program with ease, and they weren't. And so the first question was why that was happening, because to figure it out would have helped us and did help us better understand the process and if we needed to change it. But the other thing that we were finding was it was very difficult for us to explain both to ourselves and the actual candidates why they weren't making it through. And that was important as well, because you're talking about guys who are already very successful, and to just tell them out of the blue that they didn't have what it takes, or they didn't cut it, or couldn't cut it, even worse, it wasn't very empowering for them, for us. And so what happened was I and the team I was with endeavored to really try to figure out the differences in what we were looking for and what we were seeing. This is how we kind of, and I kind of broke down and discovered the differences between skills and attributes.
All right, well, let's ask that question right back to you. So let's go for skills are useful up to a point. Skills can be taught. Learnability might be an attribute, which is interesting, because you might be able to learn skills. That's an attribute that helps you to learn skills, but skills also help you up to a certain and given point, but not necessarily beyond the point. So give us what you have discovered to be the definition or the difference of the definitions between skills and attributes.
Absolutely, yeah. So skills are, you're exactly right. Skills are learned. They are not inherent to our nature. In other words, we are not born with the ability to ride a bike or throw a ball, or in the military case, shoot a gun. We can be taught those things, and we can practice them and learn them over time. We can even sit down in a classroom and be taught them by someone else. They also direct our behavior in known specific situations. So here's how and when to drive a car. Here's how and when to ride a bike or shoot a gun. And as such, because they're so specific and because they're teachable, they're highly visible. They're highly visible and they're highly measurable. And this is why most selection processes, whether it's military or athletic or business, focus a lot of their selection on visible skills, because they're very easy to see, measure, and assess. You can see how well people do that. The problem with skills is skills don't necessarily tell us how we're going to show up in uncertainty, challenge, and stress. When everything goes wrong or south, and the environment is uncertain, and so we have to figure things out, in that case, we begin to lean on our innate attributes. Attributes are different. They're innate, right? They were born with levels of adaptability, of resiliency, of situation awareness, etc. They don't direct our behavior as much as they inform our behavior.
So. Right. And in our final minute, and this is it, we have got to wrap up now. Just one more takeaway for people who are struggling. I mean, over here, the light is getting ever brighter at the end of the tunnel because we vaccinated 600,000 people in one day yesterday, which is great. And we're on target for 15 million people by the second week in February, which is a quarter of our population. But for people listening to this who are struggling, just a quick snack size takeaway. Please, Rich.
Yes. As in the military, especially as SEAL, we talk about controlling your 3-foot world, right? Sometimes all we can control is something right in front of us. So if you find yourself in trouble, at a loss, in challenge and stress, just ask yourself this question: what can I control right now? And then move to that and then ask it again. And that's how we take little steps. That's how we take that's how we eat the elephant one bite at a time. There's a million ways to say this, right? But just step by step, you know, control your 3-foot world. Don't get down. Put your head down, and it's okay if it's dark, dirty, or gritty. As long as you're moving.
What a book! What a guy! The Attributes: 25 Hidden Drivers of Optimal Performance, out now by Richard Devinney.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
She's the brightest light in British telly, and now she's focusing on your backyards. Her brilliant new virtual reality harnessing show, Your Garden Made Perfect, starts tomorrow on BBC Two at 8 p.m. And here to tell us more is an Angela that would literally scan your lawn. That's right, it's Angela Scanlawn.
Sorry, Angela, about that. Can I apologise? Well, Rachel loves you. I love you anyway, but you know that. But Rachel is, she might be your number one fangirl. What's going on between you and Angela, Rachel?
Hello, Angela.
Hi, lovely. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Good. I love Angela because I love her shows, and I love watching her because she just makes me laugh.
Well, she's very good on the telly.
She's excellent.
Every show that has her on is very lucky to get her. How does a show, because you don't have to pitch shows. People are pitching shows to you because you are a crock of TV gold. You know, how do they sway you one way or another, Angela?
Oh, well, I've been quite free this year, Chris. No, I'm playing. Well, this one came up weirdly. Your Home Ain't Perfect kind of came out of nowhere off the back of Robot Wars being cancelled. And it was this weird thing in that I was very invested in Robot Wars. It was like a baby. Then I had an actual baby. It got axed. And then Your Home Made Perfect came up. And I was honestly a little reluctant at first. I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm not Sarah Beeny. Like, property, all that is not my shtick. And then I saw the taster tape and I realised that it was actually me snooping around people's houses, and that it was a lot looser than a straight kind of design show. And so people have loved it, absolutely loved it. And I have, a little surprising to myself, but really love being part of it. It just feels like a very warm kind of, it's a lovely, lovely show to be part of. And then Your Garden Made Perfect was kind of floating around in the ether and the timing wasn't quite right. And then COVID hit and socially distanced telly became a topic of conversation. And, you know, outdoors, gardens, it made sense. And so, yeah, it just kind of, I think we've suddenly seen the value of those little patches outside our back door and how much they can benefit our health and our well-being and our state of mind, and yeah, what they can add to our lives, I suppose, without getting too heady about it. And boom, we filmed it.
No, I think, well, you know, you're not getting too heady about it. You're absolutely true, because one square foot of garden is better than no square foot of garden, is it? And a few more than that is even better. One of the revelations on last night's, tomorrow night's show that we got to watch last night, because we have that little secret link, is wildflower turf. Because Tash and I, we're such a fan of wildflowers, but we've never been successfully able to get them going. And we know that you need rocks, and you need some kind of ground fill, because wildflowers grow in places they're not supposed to, because they're these sort of beautiful weeds. But last night it's like wildflower turf. Okay, let's have some of that then.
Absolute revelation. And the idea that you would have, so instead of just laying a bog standard lawn, fine, better than AstroTurf because it's actually alive, but you can also lay, wildflower lawn, and you just mow it in the same way that you would mow a lawn, or you let it go absolutely wild, which would be my preference. But yeah, there's loads, and there's multi-species grasses, which are in one of the other episodes, and they're glorious. If you like the wildflower ones, you and Tash are going to love this. So it's like mossy kind of type of turf that you, or grass that you'd get in a woodland. So it feels like that really textured little ferns coming out of it. It's glorious. It's a little bit pricier than a bog standard grass, but it's a lot lower maintenance, because even if it gets a bit feral and wild, it looks, you know, purposefully like that.
Yeah, I mean, last night I was looking at your timber raised beds, and we're just having a raised bed built today and yesterday by the guys from our local landscaping company. But they're building it in brick, and I'm thinking, we should have gone for timber, I think.
Oh, and the sleepers, you see, because they're really cheap and they're kind of off the shelf, and they're, you know, quite... But listen, that's fine. Yeah. It doesn't matter. I think what I realised was the planters... Like, because, okay, where we live, we're in North London, and the soil in our back garden is awful. It's really acidic. It's very clay. It's very heavy kind of soil. I'm not, you know, totally okay with all the terminology. But you whack a planter in there, you put in beautiful, you know, nutrient-dense soil that you get at your garden centre or wherever.
Yeah.
And everything will grow in it, or things will certainly grow much better. Whereas if you're planting in existing soil beds, then you've got to be really aware of what kind of what the alkalinity is, or the acidity. You got the whole right plant, right place. I mean, I'm quite a nerd about this now, Chris, as you can tell, but with a planter you can just go for gold.
So you got your home made perfect, you've got your garden made perfect. It won't come as any surprise to you that during this conversation we have just bought the domain for your shed made perfect. We own that now, so you're gonna have to buy that for us. Your wedding made perfect, your husband made perfect. We bought that for 99p a year, because there's a theme going on here, and the walls are closing in on all of us. And Scanlon's, your hutch made perfect, rabbits. Listen up. Your bowls made perfect,
your
goldfish.
Life made perfect.
Your under the stairs cupboard made perfect.com.org with Angela Scanlon.
I'll do them all, Chris.
What about you?
I mean, I don't know that I've much to offer for the under the stairs one, but I'll give it a laugh.
Your hair colour made perfect, Evans.
Done. 7.34.
All right, Scan. Great to have you on the show again, as always. You're awesome.
Thank you so much.
Ta-da!
Chat to you soon.
Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
If there's been an interesting role on screen in the last 20 years, the chances are our next guest was the actress behind it. She stars alongside Justin Timberlake in the new Apple TV Plus movie Palmer, which is out now. So here to tell us all about the drama behind the Palmer is the infinitely watchable Juno Temple.
All right, Juno.
Whoa, hi.
How you doing?
What an entrance.
I thought you might like that.
Yeah, I'm good. I feel real... Yeah, encouraged now.
All right, what about this? What about this? Hang on, Juno. Juno Temple! Juno Temple! Juno Temple! Juno Temple! Juno Temple! What about that?
Well, you're making me blush. But I'm sitting in my living room on my own. But if you could see me right now, I'm fiery cheek.
Sort of my
job. How are you doing, Paul?
Very well, very well. Listen, congratulations on this film, Palmer, Apple TV Plus. It's the biggest thing on Apple TV Plus so far, I'm hearing. And bearing in mind that platform, you're sharing the likes of The Morning Show, etc., etc., etc. So congratulations, well done. I watched it last night. It's a beautiful film. I don't know how to talk around it. I don't know what to do about talking around it. So over to you, Juno. You star in it with the one and only Justin Timberlake, who is very good, isn't he?
Yeah, he's so good in it. Such a beautiful performance from him. And I think, like, again, just watching him and Ryder, who plays Sam in it, have this incredible chemistry on camera, and really just watch these two people playing these characters that are really encouraging each other to be the kind of best versions of themselves is a pretty exquisite thing, isn't it?
Eddie is an ex-lag, so he's just been sprung from prison. He's done his time, and then he's struggling to find a job, and then he sort of gets sort of shackled with, I suppose, in the beginning, with little Sam, who is amazing. Mm. And so Sam is played by Ryder Allen. Tell everybody about, first of all, the character, and then this brilliant little actor you've got to work with.
Yeah, about my character. I play Shelley in the film, who is actually Sam's mother, and it's the first time I played a mum on camera, and I'm not going to lie, I don't think I could ever ask for a more exquisite on-camera fun. I mean, Ryder was just an absolute joy from the minute I met him, and I think his character and his performance in this film is so inspiring, and he plays it with such conviction of, like, we could all learn from Sam in that film of being comfortable in our skin and embracing who we are and not being ashamed of it in any way, which I think more people than we know feel in their own skin, you know? And I just think that Ryder is going to do such incredible things. I was so proud to work with him on this job, which was a big breakout role for him. And I think, you know, him and Justin were just beautiful together. And for me, playing Shelley was like, I read the script and I was so moved by the relationship going on between these two characters, and getting to play the mother of a little boy that, I don't know, shows such such beautiful qualities of a human, and playing a mother that isn't paying attention to them because she's in her own addiction was something that I thought would be a really difficult but kind of good challenge, you know? And that was something that ultimately I really moved me to do it. And actually, the first scene we shot for me was the scene at the end of the movie where I come and see my little boy and tell him that I think it's probably better if he stays with Karma. And that was quite a big emotional scene to start off with. And Ryder was just amazing with me. And I think it broke down any kind of... I felt like I got to know him and he got to know me in the first, you know, half day of a shoot. That was really like, yeah, really, really quite magic.
Well, little Sam, the character, so our Eli, he's 8, and he was wearing dresses by the age of 2, and he wears makeup on a regular basis. Mm. And so we were all sort of, we were shouting from the rooftops last night. Tash and I were saying, in fact, one of the first times Eli was in the papers with us, we went to see a show, a David Walliams show. And yeah. And Eli mm-hmm. went in a dress, and the paparazzi caught him, and because he was in all the papers in his dress, he looked amazing, looked magnificent. So we were so on board.
Oh, I bet he did.
With little Sam and his story. So congratulations. How many times have you seen it?
I saw a rough cut of it in the summer, and then I watched the full finished version on Apple TV last weekend.
Yeah, woohoo! All right, thank you, Juno. Thanks for being here.
Yeah!
Ta-da! Juno Temple, one of the stars of Parma on Apple TV Plus, available now, and it's starring Justin Timberlake, and he's very, very good. But he's a very good actor anyway. The Social Network. He was fantastic in that, wasn't he? As the head of Napster. What was his name in that? Could never remember.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
From Icelandic fishermen to American presidents, our next guest knows just how important swimming is for everyone. Her book, Why We Swim, is out now. And here to explain why life is better when you're wetter is the closest thing to a mermaid you're ever likely to find. It's journalist and author Bonnie Soy.
Good morning, Bonnie!
That is just the best introduction I have ever heard. Thank you so much.
Bonnie, you're very welcome, and you're very welcome to the show. What a beautiful book, Why We Swim, Bonnie Soy.
Oh, thank you.
It's fantastic. So here we go. This book is an investigation of what seduces us to water despite its dangers and why we come back to it again and again. In your own words, there's the question. What are the headlines in the answer?
Well, the headlines are, of course, the banner headline is survival. And so that's sort of where the book starts. And, you know, once you... We humans have to learn how to survive the water, and once we do, it can be so much more, right? So the book is kind of divided into these five sections, these five different thematic ways of answering that question, and survival, and then it's well-being and community and competition and flow. And so the book is really a way to, you know, travel the world and ask people, extraordinary swimmers, ordinary ones, you know, the answer to that question.
And it's funny because you talk about flow in the book. There you go, one of the five sections of the book. And you write, right. The book, it's like you've written it
like as if you're swimming. I feel it has had the same calming effect on me as swimming does. And I don't know if that's intentional or it's just because it's coming from the right place. So the world is blessed, or the universe has blessed you with that. That's the vibe I get from your book. How cool is that?
That is so lovely of you to say, Chris. I really did want, of course, a book about swimming has to have that feeling of swimming, right? So not just the sensory elements of what it is like to be in the water, because it is such a singular experience when you plunge in that it, you know, you are taken out of your element, your normal element, and into something kind of strange, but also, you know, on some very primal level, deeply familiar, right? And I think we all feel that. And so I think that you can really use words to do that. And I'm really, really so touched that you felt that. So thank you for that.
No, you're welcome. You're welcome. I can't wait to take this book away somewhere where I'm very peaceful and read it again, at my leisure as opposed to for work. So what have dinosaur and mummy poop got to do with the history of swimming, please? Bonnie?
Well, let me tell you about dinosaurs and mummies and all that. So one of the things that I really wanted to investigate, of course, was going way back as far as we can to find evidence of our human swimming past. And so I talked to a paleontologist named Paul Sereno, who's a pretty famous guy. He's discovered all kinds of dinosaurs and remains of ancient peoples in the desert in the Sahara. And so he, back in 2000, I think it was, stumbled upon this, what ended up being one of the largest Stone Age cemeteries to date. And even though he's originally a paleontologist, you know, he studies dinosaurs, he really has become very interested in investigating, you know, our human past too, our human evolutionary past, as it's sort of embedded in the earth and what it reflects about our watery origins. And so he discovered this, a paleo lake system in the Sahara. And it was in what's today Niger, near the border with Libya. And it was, it was piles of clamshells and human remains. And of course, in the middle of the desert, he found turtles and Nile perch, like fish, like bones, like all of these things that indicated, of course, that once the Sahara was green and there were lakes and there were people living on the edges of those lakes, and that they quite likely knew how to swim and sort of what was it like to fish and live on this watery lifestyle.
Now, we are literally dipping our toe into the water of the subjects you cover here in this book. I mean, it's not a mammoth book. It's just so concisely and beautifully and it's so sort of fat-free as a book, so well put together. Let's go. Where should we go next? Let's go to the history of swimming. So in our more recent history, there's evidence of early life jackets from the 1750s. There's evidence. Tell us about the Cork life jackets of the 1750s.
Oh my gosh, I loved kind of digging up all these different ways that we've invented to keep ourselves alive in the water, and you know, and that includes like life jackets and one of them was like tortoise. I guess it was like the clear outer
shell,
tortoise shell goggles, right? That people use to protect their eyes diving underwater. And, we're just so imaginative and we're so inventive. And it was like kind of fun to think about the ways our imaginations interacted with our like kind of inventive survival instincts. What could we do so that we could buoy ourselves in water and not sink and not die?
Founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin, over here as a law student. Well, he's quite old when he came over here in his 40s in the mid-1700s again. He went cold water swimming. He was way ahead of Wim Hof, but he had a touch of the Wim Hof about him, didn't he?
He did. He loved to swim in the Thames, and he loved skinny dipping as well. And he said that it was, just this life-giving thing. And he, of course, as a Renaissance man, had to invent hand paddles too. to swim with.
Listen, it's great to talk to you. I know you've waited up a long, long time to talk to us. I hope you think it was worth it. We're huge fans of the book. Thanks for being on the program.
It sure was. Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
You're very welcome. Why We Swim is the book, and it's as good as it sounds. And it's written exactly how Bonnie talks. And Bonnie talks like we're swimming, doesn't she? She talks like
when
water.
When I saw it in the office last week, I thought, Why We Swim, that's so far down my street, it's outside my front door. And I didn't want it to disappoint me because it was such a good title. And I thought, please don't disappoint. And it exceeded expectations.
It really is an amazing book. Thank you very much indeed, Bonnie. Live from San Francisco.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Up next, we're speaking to Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, Matt Hancock. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. We must begin, of course, with a word to the wonder and the wisdom of Captain Sir Tom Moore.
Yes. What an inspiration. That's the word everybody's using, isn't it? I mean, so wonderful and can teach us all a bit about how to live a good life. It's very sad that he's gone. The thing I really loved was that, you know, in that first lockdown, when the NHS was clearly under pressure, he just got up and made it happen, right? He decided he was going to raise £1,000 and he made it happen.
Yeah, £39 million in the end. And it's uncounting, by the way. You can still donate to various charities that he has now personified and will be his legacy, along with, you know, our everlasting memories of Captain Sir Tom. You know, and they do say, don't they, Matt, that, you know, as far as pharmacology is concerned, that one of the most proven medicines is placebic. It is the placebo. It is the panacea. And in many ways, you know, he was that in spades for not just us here in the UK, but, you know, a positive outlook on a situation.
Positive outlook.
You know,
positive mental attitude.
Yeah.
It's why I listen to the Chris Evans breakfast show in the morning.
You're going to say something else then, beginning with show. Right, so more good news, thank heaven. What do you have to tell us this morning with regards to some amazing people based here in the UK?
Yeah, well, we've seen overnight the results from the Oxford vaccine showing that it not only leads to no hospitalisations amongst those who've had the jab in the group of 12,000 people that they've studied so far, but also that it reduces transmission by about two-thirds. So it stops the virus from spreading to a large degree, as well as protecting the individual. And you've asked me this question many times. You know, how much does the vaccine not just protect you, but actually stop the spread of the disease? And now we've got a very strong result on that it reduces that by about two-thirds, which is really, really good news for getting us out of this.
And a case study of 12,000 is no small affair, is it? I mean, that's huge. And for not a single person within the group of 12,000 people to have to undergo a hospital admission is quite substantial. It's quite conclusive, isn't it, to say the least?
Yeah, so that is a really good part of the result. And obviously, 12,000 is a, you know, that's a big number. And we're now following all those who've had the jabs to make sure that we understand how many people who've had the jab end up with a positive test and after what time, because you know that you can't, you know, you don't get that protection immediately. It does take a few weeks to come in. And the other really good result in this new publication overnight is that the 12-week gap from your first dose to your second dose actually means that you get a stronger long-term protection than if you had the second jab sooner. So the decision that we took to extend that, which was, you know, controversial to some people who said, well, I'd rather have my second jab sooner, actually is it gives you this stronger long-term protection. So that's very good news as well.
And that amazing day last weekend when almost 600,000 people.
Yeah, 598,000.
Yeah, so close.
I felt like doing 2,000 myself.
I know.
To get over the landmark.
And the target was 500,000. But, you know, on a day where you get almost 600,000 vaccinations as opposed to a day when you get, say, 395,000. By the way, neither of those are bad days. What is the difference between that 200,000 happening and not happening?
Supply. Right. It's supply. So the supply comes to us in batches.
Yeah,
and then we get it out as fast as we can. So when a big batch has just come in, then the next couple of days you have these really big numbers, and then The rest of the, you know, and then it drops down to the sort of 300,000-ish mark that we have it on other days. And so it's just that the supply is lumpy. It's the, you know, the nature of it. It's a new manufacturing process. You know, we didn't have an onshore manufacturing process for vaccines, really. We built that over the summer. And, you know, these things are not easy things to produce. And so so that's the reason. What the great news is that the NHS across the UK has demonstrated that if we get a lot that needs doing, then they can get it out. You know, that they're working all hours to make it happen. It's a that bit is not the rate limiting factor. And I've got GPs phoning saying, come on, I want some more because I've got more people to jab. That's, you know. That's great. They're working so hard to make this happen.
So, Tash, my wife and I, we've been invited to a vaccination station in High Wycombe next week, and we can't go to wait. We're going to volunteer for a shift, and we literally cannot wait. Now, you've been to many of these places similar, and are you witnessing the same stories that we're hearing? You know, people who've been having to shield for 12 months, literally being given a new lease of life, you know, walking in and skipping out just because they are so grateful and so happy.
It's a really emotional thing. It's a really emotional thing because it you know, it's life changing, and we now know it not only protects you but protects the people around you. Once you've given it that time to work the 3 weeks or so, and so I've been at these centres and watched people come out, and just the relief on their faces, it's just wonderful, and people bursting into tears. It's absolutely fantastic. And you know, each time a member of my, I'm sure it's the same for you, each time a member of my family gets a jab, you know, it goes on the family WhatsApp group, a picture of it being done. And in fact, I was listening to you the other day, you and Vassos competing about how many people you know who've had the jab. I mean, but that's what, you know, it's so important. What, last weekend, we did 1 in 60 of the entire adult population in 1 weekend.
Well done.
You know, and almost 1 in 5 of the whole population has been done already. It's been a, you know, the team have just done an amazing job, but we've got to stick at it.
All right, well, you survived us. I hear you survived GMB this morning as well. And what are you doing for the rest of the day?
Well, I'm going to see the Prime Minister now to talk about the latest, and then I'm working on the rollout. Keep the rollout going smooth.
All right, thanks for being here, Matt. Let us know when you need us next, and we shall be available.
Great stuff.
Ta-da.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, very, very welcome. It's so funny. We do get this request. Is it okay if Matt Hancock has 10 minutes? Yeah. Obviously, as long as he's going to say something that's helpful, which he always does.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky on Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.